Good morning and a very happy new year to you. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is Amardeep Kalika. He is the youngest son of Satwant Singh Kalika, the president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who was killed during those horrible events on August 5th of 2012. After those events, our guest, Amardeep, became a spokesperson for the victims' families and took it upon himself to spread a message of peace and forgiveness. He is the founder of Serve to Unite and continues to work for justice and peace. Amardeep grew up in Milwaukee, and he is joining us by phone today from India, where he is visiting. This organization was founded by families of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, Serve to Unite, and they believe that national changes begin at the grassroots level. We will talk about Serve to Unite and welcome your phone calls for Amardeep. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Amardeep Kalika, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Very nice to have you here. Well, you decided after that horrendous day, which is still so vivid in all of our memories, that you would take action, and you have founded. Please tell me about the organization Serve to Unite, the mission of that organization, and why you founded it.
Absolutely. You know, it's almost like we didn't have a choice. Part of your psychology works towards trying to figure out why this happens, and that's part of the grieving process, and I guess me and my brother had just grown up in that situation where we were going to use our rational mind to figure it out. And so Serve to Unite was a group of families in the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin who came together and said, hey, maybe part of this is that we're not going out enough and connecting with the community. So they started doing that, a lot of interfaith community service and volunteering. And then a part of that group continually work towards social justice causes, like my brother, the former police officer, and now is a public school teacher in Milwaukee. And a part of that group, the Serve to Unite group, went out and sought social justice causes like gun control or gun responsibility is what we'd rather call it, and hate crimes and bullying in schools, and they started working towards that. So Serve to Unite sparked from August 5th, but now is starting to continually do services that are either interfaith-based or volunteer-based or social cause-based. And one example is the day before Thanksgiving, we promoted something called Heritage Day, which was specifically targeted towards teachers. And we asked them to have children go home and ask their parents about their own heritage and bring that back to the school the day before they were let out for Thanksgiving break. And over 100 schools participated. We had an amazing amount of support, and it was an all-around successful day where people were able to discuss their own heritages.
Mm. Since the horrendous Sikh shooting in which your dear father was killed, we have seen another horrible act of horror in Newtown. I know that you have met with Mayor Bloomberg about guns specifically. How do you answer the question when you say that we need to put systems into place that will keep people safe? How do we do that?
Well, thank you for asking. My brother and I initiated a 20-point plan after we discussed everything with Mayor Bloomberg and Mayors Against Illegal Guns and the Brady Commission. The 20-point plan that we put together is specifically targeted towards closing the gap on the secondhand market. Right now, there's a number of open loopholes that allow people to sell guns in the secondhand market, which then they end up in hands of criminals or violently insane people or socially or mentally ill people. And that's what we aim to, like, close. That's one way to stop this. Another way to stop this, and by stopping it, I mean, obviously, the general trend of violence in America, because we're seeing this amazing correlation between guns on the street, and by the street, I mean guns everywhere, like It's different when it's in the hands of somebody who's responsible, but it's completely different when the guns are in the hands of somebody who's irresponsible, which is then going to become a crime or then become a mass killing. The way we're aiming to stop it is build loopholes like that, allow people who are gun owners to change their views. My brother and I are gun owners. He's a former police officer, and I was in Army ROTC for a long while, and we have our own guns. But being gun owners, we should promote gun responsibility. We should think to ourselves, hey, this is an earned right. People who are irresponsible should not get the privilege of having this right, and there's certain things we can do as a community to make that happen.
Mm. It has not been all that long, Armar Deep, since the horrendous events took place in Oak Creek and your father was killed. How have you been processing that? It still must be a time of mourning for you, is it not?
Yes, I mean, currently I'm calling you from India, and we're not just visiting, we're also taking our father's ashes back to the river from whence they came in an ancient land of Punjab, and that's part of the grieving process of closing chapters and trying to look for the good in things. We have a saying in Sikhism. It's called a Jaldi Kala, which literally translates to high spirits. So if somebody asks you how you're doing, you say Jaldi Kala. I'm in high spirits, meaning I see the better potential or the higher perspective in the situation. And my brother and I have been kind of living for that and towards that right now, given all the craziness that's been going on.
Mm-hmm. What kind of ceremony will you have for your father?
We'll have a number of religious ceremonies. The biggest one will be we'll caravan together through Punjab. We'll take his ashes, his photo and everything, and a number of people will pay their respects, and then we'll open the ashes over the river, which flows one way towards the Ganges and the other holy rivers, and then it'll connect to there. And, I mean, outside of that, it's a lot of time with family, the family that's that he left behind here in India, which is massive because he had 9 brothers and sisters, and they all had cousins, and it's just an amazingly large family.
Mm-hmm. I think what else happened after that event, I recall seeing you watching television on the day of the massacre and looking at you and being so moved by the way that you were able to remain calm and you were able to put all of this in whatever perspective we can put it in. It required an enormous amount of strength, of spirituality on your part. I hope you're aware of how many people you helped and continue to help as a result of your response to all of this. And so many people have asked, how were you able to do that?
Maybe the best answer is being there and being able to articulate it or being in the process helps me deal with the pain and the grieving. And all those people that, you know, like you just mentioned, I think of it vice versa. I think of it as, oh, my God, all these people are in support of what we're doing, and we're having this open conversation where we're all aiming to bring peace to a very violent situation. And so I think of it vice versa, as they're giving me the energy to maybe stay calm and be part of the process.
How did the Sikh community in Oak Creek respond to the Newtown tragedy? I know that there were overtures there, that you were in touch with people in that community, weren't you?
Actually, yeah, I went there. My brother and I went there immediately following what happened. And then the weekend after, more the community members went there and volunteered services and volunteered in grief counseling. And I specifically went there because right before I went to India, I needed to go there, and I offered my services as a grief counselor. And then while I was there, I just needed to see, you know, and touch ground zero and see the community there. And it was amazing to see. I'll share a little story with you just because we're on radio. It's going to be a little longer. I went to dinner, and there were people there from the neighborhood. And I just looked, and I turned around, and people noticed me, and they knew who I was. And then I said, wow, that looks really good. And these guys had calamari, balsamic vinaigrette on calamari. And it was like it's a delicacy there, I guess. And they offered it to me just straight away. And it was more or less like, hey, do you want some? And it was such a vibrant community and such an amazing place. So it's amazing in such a tragic way what happened there.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that the new session of Congress, which will begin tomorrow, and it's my understanding that Dianne Feinstein will introduce gun control legislation tomorrow. I'm not sure if that will happen, but that's what we've been hearing. What do you hope will happen in this new session of Congress that will put us further on the road to being safer?
I mean, when it comes to Congress, I just hope that the major gun lobbyists are able to take their hands off of the pressure points that that they've been holding for such a long time. And the way they're holding it, and I hope listeners understand this, they really fear-monger and they push people to thinking guns are being taken out of your hands. That's not the case. What's happening is it's just potentially we all know how violent guns can be and how easy it is to pull a trigger. Why don't we create responsible reform in that way so people earn the right to have a gun and then they earn the ability to, you know, use it properly in self-defense. So, I mean, I'm hoping that legislation does get introduced. Will it be, you know, ceremonial legislation? I hope not. I hope it's beefy legislation that allows people to have a developed world sense of how guns should be in society. I mean, we're the only G8 country, really, that has this open of firearms, and we have the highest crime and violence rate, and it's not by like a little, it's by almost something like 100 times the next person.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that is so hard for many of us to understand, and I believe it was your brother who met with a former white supremacist, it received some press, right, that they had a meeting that went on for some 4 hours. This attempt to try to understand the hatred from the Sikh shootings, the hatred from the Newtown shootings, the hatred from the shootings in Colorado. I mean, the list goes on. Tell me about that meeting that your brother had. It was really extraordinary, wasn't it?
It was amazing. Arno McAllis was a former white extremist, joined with my brother. He came and apologized to my brother formally, and then my brother started to talk to him, and they got to know each other on a personal level. And what they did was they started a unit within Serve to Unite where they go to schools, and the first school they went to was Cudahy High School, which is the home of the person who, you know, slaughtered people at our temple. And they went to that high school, and they had a discussion with students that lasted 2 hours and was amazingly engaged with. And then afterwards, students left. That was the last 2 hours of the day, the school day. And teachers came in, and they did a whole session with teachers, and their discussion was on justice, bullying, fear, cross-cultural norms. It ran the gamut, but it was an open discussion on how to become a more peaceful society. And then they went to dinner together, and then they came back and did one with the parents. So they spent about an 8-hour workday having open dialogue about what happened in the community, but more or less what could happen in the future to prevent it. And that, and they're offering that service to a number of schools, and they're working in the inner city, they're working in different areas where violence is prevalent, and I think they're going to be highly successful doing it, and we're hoping to expand that out to anybody who thinks that they need that type of discussion.
Well, please tell them that we welcome them on the air as well. That would be quite a conversation. And what did your brother learn? What did your brother learn about where that hatred comes from?
I think he would say, and I'm going to have to, you know, obviously take a guess here because he is his own person, but I think he would say that violence and hate comes from a detachment, whether it be a detachment from, let's say, a young child from their caretaker or their parent, a detachment from people who are different cultures, or a detachment in terms of your empathy for another human being. And that is at the core of almost all sociopathic behavior and crime. It's the idea that I don't care what happens to you, I'm doing this for me. Mm. And that can happen culturally, because people start to look at other cultures as not as humanistic. They just think of it as, oh, those people are that. And they kind of create a little, you know, group to hold them in, a little pen. And they think of them as different than just themselves. And that empathy is necessary for us to have peace, I think. Or I think he would say, too.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about your time in India right now and the response of family and people in India to the Sikh shootings and to the other shootings in America. What have people been saying to you?
Almost immediately everybody asks, you know, what is going on over there? Why are so many people able to just pick up guns and firearms and shoot? And I have to give you guys a little background on India. India is a Democrat, you know, a democracy. It's the largest in the world. It's also completely free. By freedom, I mean there is no legislation or laws to govern you anywhere. If you want to go use the bathroom on the side of the building, you can do it and nobody can ticket you. If you want to drive, you know, 120 kilometers per hour and cut lanes and zigzag all through traffic, nobody will ticket you. Hmm. It is an extremely free place. But yet they also have legislation in terms of gun control, in terms of gun responsibility. And they're wondering what's going on. And I've heard it time and again. I was just in China before I ended up in India. You know, I mean, everybody I ran into there said the same thing. They're like, what is going on over there?
What were you doing in China?
I was just there on my way in for business, and I just thought, well, you know, let me stop there before I end up in India.
Hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls and emails and Facebook communication for our guest. Amardeep Kalika is with us this hour. He is the youngest son of Satwant Singh Kalika, the president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who was gunned down during the horrible events of August 5 of 2012. Amardeep is currently in India, where he will be spreading his father's ashes, and the grieving process continues, as does the work that he is doing to bring more peace to the world. He is the founder of Serve to Unite, a peace organization whose mission is to unify and educate through volunteer service. Amardeep is, of course, from Milwaukee. He is a filmmaker. He has also served as a middle school and high school teacher. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655. As we begin a new year with these tragedies still heavy on our minds and souls, and a call for something to be done to make us a more peaceful nation, we welcome your thoughts on how to do just that. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do that. That's talk@WPR.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now at 800-486-8655. Amardeep Kalika is our guest. Amardeep is a Milwaukee native, a filmmaker. He is the founder of Serve to Unite, a peace organization whose mission is to unify and educate through volunteer service. He is the son of the slain president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who died almost 5 months ago. He is currently in India, where his father's ashes will be spread. We go to Tom in Milwaukee. Hello, Tom.
Hi, how are you doing today? First, I'd like to say I am sorry about your father. Any time we have violence like that, senseless violence, I mean, it makes the tragedy that much more horrible. My question for you is, when you're talking about people in other countries, looking at our crime and gun crime statistics, all these statistics are heavily skewed by the inner city of America, where you have you have a lot of different wars going on. You got a lot of class warfare. You have a drug war going on in America, and gang warfare, things of this nature. And all of this is heavily skewing these results that you are citing. And my question is, why would you want to put limitations and restrictions on everybody and throw out the Constitution because we have a problem? Basically, we have that is the main problem. Now, we have had a lot of senseless violence in recent years, But historically, America has been very good with guns, and I would say it's just since the 80s when a lot of these gang wars started coming online with guns themselves that we've had these major problems and the statistics that you're talking about.
Tom, that's, I mean, those are great questions. I especially thank you for the, you know, the well wishes. I mean, to answer that question, we're doing a documentary called Nursery Crimes, which deals with violence in America. And I taught in the inner city, and I grew up in the inner city when we first came over from India. We were so poor. We lived on the north side of Milwaukee in one of the worst housing projects, and my uncle was shot and murdered two apartments down. So I do comprehend the logistics, and in terms of what's happening in the inner city, I definitely comprehend that. However, mass killings and mass shootings and serial murders, if I count up the serial killers in America, if I count up the sociopathic killers in America, they're not generally coming out of the inner city. And a lot of them get away with murder because they're considerably mentally ill. And so the conundrum is, and we've seen a horribly crazy rash of mass shootings in this past 2012. But if I counted up the last two decades of mass shootings, we're talking about, it's different when it's a violence and you live in the inner city and you comprehend what's going on and the dynamics of that socioeconomic war. And it's completely different. You're walking into a church on a Sunday morning and somebody starts shooting at you. Or you're going into a mall in Portland and somebody starts shooting at you, and this guy's dressed in flak gear and anarchist, you know, mentality. Or you're sending your kids, 20 beautiful kids, to elementary school, and they're being killed. So there is a dynamic of you can't compare numbers because the other is just so gruesome to even contemplate. It strikes at the very core of what it is to be an American. I hope that answers it, because I think that's what's scaring a lot of people in other countries. And in terms of why do I think it's a considerable thing to create responsibility for other gun owners, oh, here's the crux of it. Because we have such big loopholes on gun ownership. You could lose your gun today, quote unquote, lose your gun, or lose 100 of them and never have to report it to anybody. And this is how guns end up in the inner city. This is the black market. This is the way guns get sold. Somebody has a side job where they're selling, you know, thousands of guns a year for $100 or $200 to inner city kids. And that has to stop.
Is your film completed, Amardeep?
No, it's just beginning right now.
Oh, it is.
And we're going to spend the next 12 months going into the nooks and crannies of this issue, especially as it comes down to the first 10 years of life, because there's certain cultural things that we do that might have an effect of creating that disassociative pattern.
Let's go next to Rick in Milwaukee. Hello, Rick.
Oh, good morning. Let me say, first of all, that I'm terribly, terribly sorry for the loss of this young man and of the losses of the other innocent people suffered at the Sikh temple. I think I probably even cried that morning when I heard about this. It affected me so badly. The thing is, though, you know, the government, especially pushed by the federal government, has tried these gun control schemes going all the way back to 1934 under President Franklin Roosevelt. And it simply hasn't had any measurable effect. And as proof of this, there's a very interesting, fairly long article in Time magazine from last August entitled "The Gun Has Won." And they have a very detailed chart in there of mass shootings in the United States. And it shows that there wasn't any effect at all of that 460-page document called the Assault Weapon Ban that was passed by the Clinton administration. The shootings at Columbine, unfortunately, happened in 1999, and that law had already been in effect for 5 years at that time, and it had absolutely no effect at all.
Amardeep, your response.
I think you're absolutely right. There is some anachronism in terms of statistics. So in terms of my response, you have to handle the problem from both sides. Dwight D. Eisenhower in 61, as he was leaving office, he confessed that the military-industrial complex has gotten so strong that it's going to have an effect on us as a society. And he was warning that, hey, if you grow a gun culture, it's going to overgrow itself. Now, that's not the only reason people shoot people. It's not just the fact that there is a gun around. That is just one of the things that make it easier. There's a correlation in Outliers, the book by Malcolm Gladwell. There's a correlation between having books in the house and literacy, but not a correlation between parents reading books to their children and literacy. So having guns around does affect, and we do see a strong correlation there with every country that has gun responsibility. And I won't call them gun laws because generally America, we don't have, even in the remote vicinity, of very tough gun laws. And I'm just hoping that there becomes a more responsible gun culture. We need to close these loopholes where people are able to sell those guns to other people. And maybe it's just easier to make it like we're asking for microchipping on certain guns, or micro-stamping, and being able to follow and track where these guns actually exist and how they end up in the spots that they end up.
Dale writes an email, I would be interested in hearing more about your upcoming documentary, Nursery Crimes. How can listeners find out more about this project? Are there ways we can get this, help get this film off the ground?
Well, there is. Nurserycrimes.org is the website set up, and the way it's set up is we're a crowdfunded film. My last film we crowdfunded for a little over $500,000, and that had to do with new technology research, and this was pre-August 5th. But nurserycrimes.org is the website, and people can go there and see a trailer on the film and see what it's going to be about, and they can support it in many different ways. They can support it by obviously just sharing the link with other people. They can support it financially, or they can support it by becoming an ambassador, because ambassadors go out and actually promote the film or are able to engage in terms of, hey, you're an ambassador because you're a sociologist in the inner city and you want to, you know, give feedback and discussion on the topic. So that's the best way to engage.
Mm-hmm. And that's on our Facebook page, too, The Kathleen Dunn Show, in case you want to go to that page to get that link. Tell me more about Serve to Unite, the mission to unify and educate through volunteer service, the volunteer service component of that, Amardeep. What does it encompass?
At the root of Sikhism, the religion that we have, is seva, which means service. And you can become rich in multiple ways in terms of our culture. You can become monetarily rich by actually just doing good business, or you can become educationally rich or socially rich. You can have a large family, or you can have a PhD. But in order to stay grounded, in order to never let your ego get out of check, you do service and you volunteer. And sometimes that means cleaning the toilet at the church. But no matter what, that is the way that we keep checks and balances in terms of our own self, as laid down by, you know, the teachers in our faith.
Tell me a little bit more, please, because you're honoring him and spreading his ashes in India now. Tell me more about your father, how he came to the United States, I've read stories that he came here with $100 in his pocket, how he became president of the Sikh temple. He must have been quite an extraordinary man.
He was an absolutely unique and extraordinary person, and I'm finding more of that out as I visit his homeland and I visit, you know, the farm he grew up in. And it's amazing because at the time when he came in 82, there was an extreme rash of violence here in northern Punjab, where in 82, 83, 84... And this is about the time where, you know, Indira Gandhi was assassinated for her, you know, there was like this back and forth tension between Sikhs and Hindus. And he left a country in turmoil because he, you know, it was just safer for his two little children and his wife. And he came to a country where he thought, you know, it was extremely safe. Mm. And then he went to work in the inner city, which was a really difficult thing because, you know, there's just a lot of violence there. And there's several times in terms of, you know, he's working at the gas station and, you know, he's robbed and the person, you know, pistol whips him, hits him in the head with a bat, and he ends up in the emergency room. He ends up having to cut his hair in order to, like, to fix the wound. And it just, he lived such a tremendously big and influential life in terms of what he did for us as his children and the community. And there's so much to say on so many levels. I miss him every day. I miss talking to him. I miss just hanging out and just, you know, just being around.
I'm sure you do. Let's go to Kasser in Germantown. Hello.
Yes, you had a caller earlier who said that the problem is an inner city problem. Even though his intentions are good when he came up with that argument, but I kind of disagree. I am originally from Pakistan, and what happens, let's say if there's a suicide bomber that blows up himself up and kills 50 people, we don't talk about, you know, this isolated area in Pakistan that has these problems. The media in this country talks about Pakistan having this problem. Pakistan, you know, a guy blew himself up. Or Nigeria or whatever. Nobody talks about, you know, isolated area. So people overseas in other countries do not know inner cities or Harlem or you know, south side of Chicago or whatever, or wards. When they hear the news, they hear U.S. And people also know, if people are very smart in the rest of the world. We think that the world revolves around us and NRA. No, people in the rest of the world are very intelligent. They know that the largest number of people per capita that are incarcerated are in this country, and most of them are minorities. They also know that the second highest number of guns per capita owned by any country is U.S., only second to Yemen. People know all these facts. Everybody knows that, you know, these crimes that were committed were in, decent areas. We have gang warfare maybe in certain areas of the country, but when these people, most of the serial killers are not minorities, they are white people.
Amarjeet.
Well, let me answer that. Maybe it's obviously not a question, but let me phrase this by saying, in Milwaukee, the inner city is only minutes away from the downtown, and people should understand that economically, when you have a city or part of a city that's almost handicapped or like slumped, it affects everybody. And why are we talking about that? Is because in terms of violence is a cultural phenomenon. It's not an isolated issue. It's not something that you can sever ties to and go, oh, that guy on that side of the tracks is not affecting me on this side of the tracks. That's quite the opposite. If you look at the inner city and you look at the media that comes out of the inner city, it has an immense effect on the rest of the social system all around the nation. If I just monitored gangster rap and said, okay, it's a product of the inner city, the same inner city that person had been discussing, if I said, hey, let's monitor that and see how much effect it has on children all around the nation, whether they be living on a farm or wherever, we're going to see that's a cultural phenomenon. That violence that's coming out of that gangster rap is affecting people, even though that they're not part of the inner city. So maybe the best way to think about it is we are united. We are the United States of America. We are all together on everything, whether it be if we fight a war, whether it be the fiscal cliff, whether it be education, whether it be violence. We are together, and that means that we have to look out for one another. And it's extremely, discouraging for me to be from the inner city and look around and see all these problems and nobody coming to help when those problems aren't caused necessarily by just people from the inner city. There's a lot of pressure that comes to the inner city socioeconomically that long predates the obvious situation now. So I think it'd be good for all of us to look at it as we're all together on this.
Mm-hmm. And we are. Thank you, Kasser, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Amardeep Kalika is our guest this hour, the youngest son of Satwant Singh Kalika, the president of the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin, who was gunned down during those horrific events at the temple on August 5 of 2012. Amardeep is joining us by phone from India, where he and family members will be spreading his father's ashes. And we're talking about his work. He has founded Serve to Unite. It's a peace organization. The mission is to unify and educate through volunteer service. Amardeep has a film which is something that he's working on right now. He's also a former middle school and high school teacher. He also was in Newtown and after their horrendous tragedy, and he is concerned about how we make this country a safer place. We go to Art next in Milwaukee. Hello, Art.
Good morning. Thanks for the show, and thanks for your guest service. I attended an event on December 30th, which was a candlelight vigil for victims of homicide violence in Milwaukee that Northcott Neighbor House sponsors from the north side, but it was at a church on the south side. And all of the victims, their names were read. And there was one, Dalbar Singh, who was listed. And since there was only one person with the last name of Singh, I assume it was not part of the Oak Creek massacre. So I'm wondering if you're familiar with that person and what led up to his death.
Yeah, I'm only about a month and a half after August 5th, maybe it was less than that, Dalbir Singh was shot and murdered outside of his gas station that he was working at, and it's still not understood whether it was a robbery attempt or just a random act of violence. And I will have to say, like, it's amazing because as I'm doing this documentary, Nursery Crimes, I'm able to, now we have researchers that canvass all of the gun violence and murders that happen in the nation. And I just personally, I have to say, it's amazing and scary to see so much gun violence on a day-to-day basis. We get our local news, but when I tune in, and I live in Los Angeles, and I tune into the local news, I end up hearing another, like, brash of, like, you know, 16 murders in that week, or this family's been gunned down, and this, and it's just mind-boggling because we don't have a pulse on the situation. We don't engage it. We kind of turn our heads, and maybe this is what the Romans would call the bread and circus. The bread and circus is when politicians in general just, and this is not, I'm not saying this about the United States, I'm saying in Rome, they had this term for when they wanted to fight a war. They'd give bread to the people so they weren't hungry, and they'd send out circuses so people were entertained. And it seems like part of that is happening in America where we don't want to engage the issue. We don't want to engage certain issues, and we'd just rather be entertained and, you know, fed.
Yes. Anything else, Art?
No, I appreciate the bread and circuses comment. Something that some of us in Milwaukee use referencing our parades and our summer fest when we had severe racial problems of a different kind than we've got now. So it has some universal significance.
Thank you, Art.
Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Thomas in Decorah, Iowa. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, Thomas. Good morning. My deepest sympathies to your guests on the loss of his father, and I'm sure many of his friends. And I do agree with him that in this country we do have to learn how to be more tolerant of everybody around us. But I would like to make a comment. He had mentioned that we should have to earn the right to own a gun in this country. And I would like to say that gun ownership in this country is a guaranteed right by the Constitution, just like freedom of speech and freedom of religion was guaranteed by our founders so that we could defend ourselves from others and from an oppressive government if it was necessary, or a government that did not do enough to protect us. And I think it's very interesting that your guest mentioned about how free India was over there, but his father felt it necessary to come to the United States in order to keep his children safe.
Do you let me
great
just
question.
Okay. Yeah, Amardeep,
I can
go ahead.
I can tell. Those are easy to answer, actually. It's really, really simple. As soon as we start thinking of the Constitution as not a living entity, as soon as we start thinking of it as just something that's not able to be touched, it won't be modified based on new information or as we get educated as a society. And when you look at the Second Amendment, it says a well-regulated militia. Regulated is actually in the phrase. And so people take it, and I think they've liberally used it in order to sell more guns or in order to have a more impactful military-industrial complex in this nation. We've used it, and we've spread it and said this like almost like this crazy lie that you just have the right to own guns. No, you have the right to be part of a well-regulated militia, which means that you can own guns. But this was, I mean, we're talking about 200 years ago where, you know, the guns that we had then took minutes to fire. And what we have now are completely different weaponry. It's completely different in terms of the situation. Now, in terms of, like, India, like, believe me, I by no means think that India has a perfect system. I by no means believe that my dad wasn't saying that this is an extremely violent place, I need to get out. That was in 1982. I think right now in 2012, India is far different than it was in 82. They just had, you know, become independent. So, I mean, it's hard to compare. And he actually thought America was a far safer place than it was. And, I mean, obviously, staring down a barrel of a gun in his last minutes, I'm pretty sure he, at that point, even, I mean, was shook to his core to think he could be at church at 10 a.m. On a Sunday and be gunned down.
Yeah. Yeah. That leaves you speechless, doesn't it? We'll welcome more phone calls in just one moment. Amardeep Kalika is our guest this hour. He's joining us by phone from India, where he and his family will be spreading his father's ashes. His father was killed at the Sikh temple. He was the president of the Sikh temple in Oak Creek, gunned down on August 5th of 2012. Amardeep is his youngest son, Satwant Singh Kalika, and he has done a number of things. Well, before the horrors of that day, he had worked as a former middle school teacher and a high school teacher. He is an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker, and he is working right now on a documentary, Nursery Crimes. If you go to our Facebook page, Kathleen Dunn Show, you can find out more information about the documentary that he's currently working on. And he is the founder of Serve to Unite, which is a movement, a peace organization whose mission is to unify and educate through volunteer service. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go to more phone calls now for Amardeep. Tarai in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to say, first of all, to your guests, I'm so sorry about your father. I couldn't imagine if something like that happened to me. I remember the day that it happened, and my heart went out to you, and it still does. And then a couple months later, I was in the Brookfield Square Mall during the Izana shooting, which was very scary and sort of has left an effect on me also as a person just walking around, like your guest was just saying, on a Sunday morning, going about your day. And when the alarms in the Brookfield Square Mall started kind of going off, they made an announcement. The first thing that crossed my head was, I hope I'm not in the middle of a mass shooting. And then I was like, nah, you know, don't think that way. That's kind of crazy. And sure enough, across the street. So I do think that it is, you know, kind of a form of terrorism if it happens so close to you, where to go out on the day and think that that could happen when you hear an alarm is very scary. So I just wanted to say it sort of made me want to be more active against or for responsible gun control. So is there any way somebody could do that in the public through your organization?
Absolutely, absolutely. We're supporting a 20-point plan right now, which is on causes.org, where we're trying to get as many signatures as possible. But we're also just doing grassroots things, and that's what we specialize in. We specialize in going and doing volunteer service at a church. And this is kind of interesting because churches generally, there is this connection in America of God and gun. And I've seen bumper stickers that are just really outrageous where it's something like God, gun, and guts. Let's keep them all in America. And the churches generally don't want to get involved on this social justice issue. But given what's been happening, they are starting to change and starting to turn as their, you know, congregations start to unite and kind of ask for this. As soon as we have, you know, support like that on that ground, I think we can make change and we can make some radical change in a very short amount of time. So feel free to go there and then, you know, feel free to drop us an email and we'll connect with you.
Have there been, has Feinstein's office been in touch with you or any congressional leaders concerning legislation that will be introduced in the next session of Congress, Amardeep?
They've been in touch with us through organizations that we work with, which are Mayors Against Illegal Guns with Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Barrett in Milwaukee, and Mayor Scafidi now in Oak Creek, who is a Republican, who, you know, changed his view on gun responsibility. And they've been in contact with us through the Brady Commission, which we work with. But since we've been in India, we haven't been able to engage on all fronts, but we're going to take care of family matters first and then come back and have more of a lively debate as we work through this.
I'm sure you will. Tara, thank you for the call. Brett in Oshkosh. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Brett.
Oh, how you doing? Firstly, I just want to, you know, say that I'm a little frustrated by people calling up and offering their condolences and then putting the bus in the next comment and defending things about gun rights. I'm an Australian, obviously, as you can hear, originally, but I am an American citizen now, and I've been in this country for just on 13 years. I love this country. It's a wonderful country. It has a lot to offer. But this frustrates me because I see a lot of the so-called loud voices, especially in the NRA, distorting facts from my country and other countries, reporting that they're violent and they're not free and all that kind of thing. And so it does frustrate me a little that we can't get some clarity and some honesty from these people. And they're hoodwinking the public into believing that this right to own guns, as your guest has actually rightly clarified, is not guaranteed. And also that, they're clouded in this veil of patriotism, that if you don't defend that right, then you're not a patriot. Well, I don't really defend that right, and I consider myself a true patriot for both countries that I'm a citizen of. So that's just my frustration, and I really appreciate your guest's work. I've been following it for a little bit, and I really, again, add my condolences, but without a disclaimer.
Thank you, Brett, for your call. Amardeep.
Well, thank you, Brett, and I know what happened in Australia in terms of the mass shooting, and there was one in the UK where they changed the gun responsibility laws, and since I think that mass shooting in Australia, I think that happened in 97 or 95 or something like that, there has, and I forgive me for not having the stats in front of me, but there has not been a mass shooting since they changed the gun laws. And I do comprehend patriotism. And for me, a patriot is somebody who doesn't blindly follow the status quo in terms of certain things. If something is wrong and you know that the facts are there and you know the correlations are there and you know in your heart more guns would equal more violence or more deaths, I think it's time to speak up because there's a 10% on the other side that's speaking far louder than the 80s or 70% of the other people who do believe in this. There's 80% of NRA members when you do, and this has been statistically done so many times by the organizations we work with, 80% of NRA members do believe in 100% background checks. Currently, that is not the case. There are many people who get guns that have no background check, and it's something like 66% don't have a background check. Even though that's not supposed to happen, it does happen. So what do we do to fix that? We say, well, that's a mandatory thing. If you're going to buy a gun, you're going to get a background check. Guess what? We'll do you one better. If you're going to buy 1,000 rounds of ammunition or over 100 rounds of ammunition, We're going to re-background check you. We're going to check again to make sure nothing has happened. Like, for example, you just went to jail recently, or you just had a mentally ill episode. So those are types of things that are in the 20-point plan to help understand and engage this issue.
Thank you so much, Amardeep. Please stay in touch with us. All the best to you and your family as you go through even more difficult days. And Amardeep Kalika, our guest this hour of the program, and go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, for more information about all that he is doing. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning.